Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. Dave Ross alongside Wes Reynolds here at South Point Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Wes, we're going to have the King of New York, Will Hill, join us later on this hour. A huge win for the Metropolitans on Sunday. Come back, rain delay, and then yesterday lose to the Yankees. We'll find out what the hangover effect is in New York, and I know he's got some plays on that game. And maybe even a future play.
Yeah, he has a futures ticket that all of a sudden has very good equity at this standpoint. So we'll get to you that at the end of the hour.
And we're also going to talk all things NFL. I did want to just begin very quickly with something you and I were talking about before we came in. And you and I, well, I normally love to talk golf with you, and you're going to have long shots coming up this week. You got the last FedEx Cup tournament, the third of the three events coming up in Atlanta, Georgia, to cap off the PGA Tour golf season in earnest here this weekend. But big news, Will Zalatoris, who had a withdrawal after winning the first leg, cannot now go not only in the final event here at the FedEx Cup, but also the President's Cup. So, so if you were going to play the Team USA against the President's Cup, we'll find out what those teams look like. Will Zalatoris will not be a part of this.
Yeah, Zalatoris withdrew on Saturday's third round, middle of the round, back issue. You know, getting stretched and whatnot. Turns out he now has two herniated discs in his back. So he was number three coming into this week at Eastlake for the Tour Championship in the FedEx Cup standing. So he would start at seven under par. But now withdrawing, also out for the President's Cup, as you mentioned. So Davis Love III, you know, already six guys put on that team. So he's going to have six captain's picks, I believe, 2 weeks from today on September 7th. So Zalatoris not being considered. So who does that open the door for? Maybe somebody like a Scott Stallings or a Sahith Theegala. Those are kind of the guys, because you would expect like Spieth and a couple of those other players to be picked as captain's pick. So Zalatoris now out for the President's Cup and for the FedEx Cup.
Just a, it has moved. That I don't know if it's a Zalatoris move that is predicated this numbers move, but Team USA was about 4-1. And I'm seeing now it's been shortened a little bit, about minus 330. That I'm seeing in some places.
Well, and we also don't know what the international team is going to look like, because the top two point getters on the international team right now that have locked in spots are Cameron Smith and Hideki Matsuyama. However, if they elect after the Tour Championship concludes on Monday, that, you know, there's rumors that several people are going to announce that they are going to be moving to
Live Golf. It's coming next week.
Yeah, so these are two of the prime rumored guys to be moving. So all of a sudden, that changes the international dynamic completely.
It really does. So again, before you lock in these numbers for the President's Cup coming up next month in September, realize there are going to be some major moves coming in the next week in the world of golf. And very quickly, it's just throwing it out there, because I did hear this on the Golf Channel yesterday, and it got me thinking, Wes, if we were commissioners, if we were Jay Monahan, I'm glad I'm not right now, but if we were co-commissioners, would you not embrace a PGA Tour event against the LIV Golf event? Because, look, we're talking about the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup next year. Those are major, major events. We kind of get us against the world, us against Europe, us being the United States, us against the LIV Tour.
Yeah,
I think more people would be interested in that.
If it were the fans and people like us, we'd be saying yes. But obviously, there's a lot of moving parts, and then there's going to be big-time corporate sponsors of these players like, I don't know if I want to do this, and television partners. And it's all the business people that ruin everything, Dave.
It really does, because I think from a fan interest, it would be there. And again, if it's all about money, and that's why these people are going over to the LIV Tour events, go ahead and throw some money in something like that and have those guys go at each other. That would not be manufactured. There's real dislike for the guys going over to the LIV Tour from the PGA Tour guys. So just throwing it out there, that'd be interesting.
That's that professional wrestling booker in me. We've got some real heat. Let's exploit it.
You don't need to fabricate it. It's their world of golf. We're doing you a favor. Make it happen. It looks like Carolina is going to make Baker Mayfield happen here. He's going to be the starting quarterback. It's been announced. So he is going to get the nod over Sam Darnold. I don't think this is a surprise to you and I, or maybe anybody out there. But what do you make of the Panthers now that this news is in fact final? Does it change your evaluation at all, knowing that Baker now, and you know, we heard that I believe it was Anderson, the wide receiver who came over from the Jets with Darnold, like he was like, I don't want this guy to be my quarterback. Now he's like, oh, I love Baker's leadership.
Right.
Do you buy the Baker leadership 2.0 out of Cleveland that maybe this really helps revive that Panther offense?
I don't know if I buy it, but it's certainly what's going to happen. We've got kind of a funny scenario here in week one. The Cleveland Browns are actually paying the Carolina Panthers starting quarterback more than they're paying their own starting quarterback, which right now looks like it's going to be Jacoby Brissett, unless there's all of a sudden a late move for Jimmy Garoppolo. But I don't even know if doing that and committing that money, does he make you that much better than Jacoby Brissett makes you right now, and I'm not convinced of that. So you look, Carolina's one of those interesting teams because I think that they could be better than their win total. Just their defense, you would think, is going to be pretty solid. All these first rounders they have on that defense that they've drafted over the years, Brian Burns, Derek Brown, Shaq Thompson, J.C. Horn, C.J. Henderson, who they didn't draft, but they traded with Jacksonville, and he was like the number 9 overall pick in the draft 1 year. So Carolina was number 2 in the NFL last year in terms of yards allowed per game. So you know the defense has potential, but they always got put in jail because the offense just couldn't move the ball.
And injuries.
Well, yeah, whether it was Sam Darnold or whether it was Cam Newton, and then, of course, McCaffrey being out. That's the thing. McCaffrey hadn't stayed healthy the last 2 years. I think he's played, what, like 12 games?
Right, not even a full season.
Yeah. So.
And Horn went out last year. Mm-hmm. Remember, they got off to that 3-0 start last year, Carolina did, and you thought, oh, wow. They've got something with all these young defenders that you mentioned. Christian McCaffrey was running hard. 3-0, everything looks good. Yeah. And then McCaffrey goes out. A lot of key defenders go out, and the bottom kind of falls out. So I look at the profile, and again, you mentioned that week one. Right now, I believe they're a one-point favorite now over Cleveland with the news, obviously, that Deshaun Watson will not be playing for 11 weeks. I wonder now, does that feel like the right side to be on in that revenge spot for Baker Mayfield?
I don't know if there's a such thing as a right side here. I think it's all about a right number and everything. A lot of it is timing in terms of the market. This is a middler's paradise. If you got Carolina early, you know, back in May, plus 4.5, even 3.5, or even 3 or better, all of a sudden, now you can play it as a teaser and try to middle it like with the teaser, because right now I'm seeing with Carolina up to 1.5. What does that do? That now puts Cleveland in Wong teaser territory, teasing through the 3 and the 7, those key numbers. So all of a sudden now you could perhaps have Carolina plus 4.5 or 3.5 if you took it early, which I know some of the sharper bettors did. And you can get Cleveland plus 7.5 on a teaser. That's a big margin. That's a big fat, like 12 plus point middle there. So right now, if I were to bet it, and I don't have a ticket on this yet, but if I were to bet it right now, I'd try to find a dance partner of Cleveland and play 7.5. I know Jacoby Brissett wasn't the Jacoby Brissett of Indianapolis. No. At Miami, he obviously did not look very good, but maybe he's got a new lease on life. This is a Cleveland team that I think does have talent. They have a lot of – they'll be able to run the ball. They're one of the best rushing teams in the league, even though Nick Harris, their center, now going to be out for the season. That's why Cleveland didn't make the playoffs, in my opinion. Not necessarily the erratic quarterback play, but the fact that the offensive line, they were just dropping like flies. So you look, and now you're getting Cleveland perhaps on a six-point teaser at 7.5. That would be the way I would look to bet this game. But – Carolina, look, last year they started hot. We were thinking, okay, maybe this is a team that could be, you know, one of the last teams to make the wild card.
Yeah,
they're 3-0
yeah,
to start the season. Then all of a sudden in week 13, bye week, they fired the offensive coordinator, Joe Brady. They were 3-0, and then they finished 2-12. And I know a lot of that was injuries and was bad quarterback play, but that team took such a nosedive that I think maybe some bettors out there are probably questioning the team's toughness a little bit. You know, it's like when it really got tough, you guys took a powder here. Yeah. So is Matt Rhule the guy to kind of steady the ship? Because Matt Rhule is definitely on the hot seat down there in Charlotte, because David Tepper, since he took over the team, a lot of losing down there in Charlotte, and he didn't buy this team to have a losing team. So he will not be hesitant to off Matt Rhule and get somebody else.
One thing I think you do a really good job, Wes, on the network, certainly you and I doing NFL games last year, is you're talking about chasing numbers, right? Now, the recreational wager was probably not even aware back in May that you could have gotten the Panthers plus 4.5.
Right.
And now the Panthers, as you mentioned, with the Baker Mayfield news, obviously the Deshaun Watson news, a lot of things have happened since May to get to where the number is now, with Carolina now favored by a point. But I think what you're doing, what you're advising, is that's the way people can maximize the line move if they didn't get involved in May.
Yeah, sometimes we use the term right side, wrong side. There's right number. Every side has a certain number that is takeable. You know, it's hard to say, hey, this team's unbettable. Obviously, you know, you're not wanting to lay Carolina as a favorite right now when you could have got them as 4.5-point underdogs. I know news changed it and whatnot, but yeah, you don't want to necessarily chase numbers this early in the season, because a lot of the times we get our reads, even though our reads for the season on a team might be right, they're going to be wrong in week one. So, like, you know, you'll have a team that everybody is high on in the offseason. They'll lay an egg in week one. It happens every single year. Mm-hmm. So you never necessarily want to panic. You just want to get into the habit, I think, of taking good numbers. And, you know, laying 1.5 now with Carolina, that doesn't mean it won't cover or it won't win.
But you're just not getting the best of the number.
That's a bad practice.
Right.
When you're laying 6, the worst of it.
And that is the point here, is that I think Weston's education process there is stop betting game. Even if you didn't know back then you couldn't have gotten Carolina plus 4.5, then you're not really taking it seriously. You've got to look at where the numbers have moved and realize that you're betting the worst of the number if you bet Carolina.
And especially this early in the season where there is a little bit more line variance. Look, the guys behind the counter and the players are the same, and the fact that you're not 100% sure your numbers. These numbers are not going to be as tight early in the season that they're going to be like at the halfway point. But still, you don't want to necessarily take the worst of it. So if I do get involved in this game, it's probably going to be Cleveland on a teaser.
All right, so that is very good advice. But again, the news is official. It will be Baker Mayfield leading the charge for the Panthers against his former team, the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, what an interesting point. They're paying, the Browns are paying more to the starting quarterback for Carolina than they are to their own. Wow. When we come back, let's take a look back at preseason week number 2. Look ahead at preseason game number 3. Come on back. It's the Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much, much more. Download the BetMGM app today or stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Back alongside Wes Reynolds, I'm Dave Ross. We roll on the Lombardi line here on a Tuesday. Breaking news out of the world of college football.
Yeah, this from our buddy Brett McMurphy, and he is reporting that Nick Saban has agreed to an 8-year, $93.6 million extension that keeps him as the highest paid college football coach in the country. So ballpark at about $11.5 million a year, so about a $2 million raise a year. Nick Saban, by the way, on Halloween of 2022, here in just a couple months from now, will turn 71 years old. So he is going to be, what, 78, 79 by the time this contract, if he indeed fulfills this contract to its duration. And look, I mean, it's no surprise, Alabama, look, 7 national championships he has brought the University of Alabama, actually 6, because one of them was at LSU. But, I mean, to be 79 years old, and I think in his last year I was looking at some of I was looking at some of Brett's tweets in terms of how he laid this out. 2029, because he gets annual increases apparently every year in this contract. $12.7 million in 2029 when Nick Saban will be 70 years of age.
Well, 78 years of age. 70's a new 40.
Yes.
That's what they say, I believe.
Apparently it is, but look, he seems to be in good health.
Yeah.
He seems to be engaged, looks great. Certainly has the fire based on what he said about Jimbo Fisher, his former apprentice or liege or whatever, assistant, and saying, you know, that Texas A&M bought all their players. We wouldn't do that here at Alabama.
Oh, no.
I mean, we're clean and pure as the white-driven snow, but I digress. So Nick Saban certainly has the fire, and we're going to see that fire here in a couple weeks. College football,
oh my.
We get week 0, but week number 1, arguably the feature game on the college football calendar. Actually, it'll be week two because Alabama's going to get Utah State in the opener. By the way, Alabama, I believe, about a 38.5, 39-point favorite over the Aggies in Tuscaloosa. Calm before the storm, because then Nick Saban's going to get another former assistant, that being Steve Sarkisian at the University of Texas. Neutral side game, by the way. But Nick Saban, last couple times he's taken on assistants, lost to Jimbo last year. That was the first one that he ever lost to an assistant, and then went ahead and did it in the national championship game to Kirby Smart. So, you know, Alabama is being priced in the market like this is the Nick Saban revenge tour, and looks like the market is going to bear fruit on that pretty much on a weekly basis.
It's got a very Wolf of Wall Street feel to it.
Yes.
I'm not beeping leaving, right? Like Nick Saban isn't going anywhere. You guys keep waiting for me to retire.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not leaving. And so when I go to talk to those kids and my assistants talk to those, Nick Saban's going to be standing right here at Tuscaloosa. We're still going to be the team to beat each and every year, at least theoretically, possibly for the next 8 years.
And look, he's at the point where it's not like it's a Bobby Bowden situation. When Bobby Bowden was at Florida State, and clearly as he got older, the program had slipped a little bit. He was a little bit more of like a CEO coach.
That's right.
Standing on the scaffold with the little megaphone. Nick Saban is very much engaged, even at about to turn 71 years old. So, you know, can't disagree with Roll Tide going ahead and extending him. It's like, who else are you going to get that's better right now? He's the Bill Belichick of college football.
That is a, must have been a fascinating conversation. Like, coach, so how long do you want this extension for? How about 8 years?
Yeah.
Coach, you do realize that, well, I guess you're Nick Saban, so it's age
like,
is just
it's
a
like
number.
We got to gauge your interest. You have no interest in, like, running for governor, running for Senate, or any. No, I don't want to do that. I'm a ball coach, guys.
And I think the tentacles there could be felt down there in Death Valley at Clemson because Dabo – right, that's a Saban disciple. Mm-hmm. He has it, I believe, in his contract. The only job he could leave for is Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? There's
you're
no
gonna,
job.
You're going to have to wait, buddy.
It looks like you're staying down there and going to rub the rock.
Go ahead, Nat. Maybe you'll have an opportunity to try that NFL experiment, even though it didn't necessarily work well for the last guy that tried to do
that. It doesn't work very well for a lot of those college coaches that try to go to the NFL. It looks like Nick Saban is not leaving anytime soon. Let's go back to the NFL here. You look back at preseason week number two, rather. And you did see, and we talked about this last week, too, that after week one, and if you include the Hall of Fame game, the over went over 14 of the 17 games in the Hall of Fame game in week one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it felt like a bit of the revenge of the unders in week number two of preseason. Do you tally that up to recency bias? People bet what they saw.
Right.
They bet up the number. Books obliged and said, fine, keep playing those overs.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of felt like it came back to the pack here in week number two.
Yeah, and look, I think part of it was 14-3 in week one, plus the Hall of Fame game the week before. And look, you got to price it in because you don't want to necessarily give cookies away and give away bad numbers, even though these are lower limits and less volume in the market in terms of just the amount of bettors that are going to be in the preseason market. But you obviously taxed it in the opener, and some of them moved up and some of them moved down because everything in preseason is basically information-based.
Yep.
So it's like, okay, who's going to be playing and whatnot? And last week, one of the things you did see were, I believe it was about half the league. I believe it was 16 of the 32 teams. They did those open joint practices and whatnot. So they decided that they were not going to, I think, do the dress rehearsal game because it's like, okay, do we want to do the dress rehearsal game? Even if we're running basic offense, not showing anything, or basic defense, not really giving much away, but still, you can see another team's personnel because you're going against them 2 days or 3 days, and you're going to watch that film at night when you send the players home and see if you see anything. So it's like, maybe it's a good idea not to do the dress rehearsal game when we've practiced against this team that we're playing two or three times before the actual game. Plus the fact that when you finally get to hit another guy in another jersey, gets a little chippy.
Yep.
So it's like, do I really want my first team quarterback out there when I know I've seen a guy on the other squad that's been chippy and been in a couple fights already, and he's coming after my guy? Absolutely not. So you're seeing, I think, this week, for most teams, is going to be like the dress rehearsal week, where you would think where the starters at least play a quarter or maybe play a half, with obviously a few exceptions. I don't see somebody like Aaron Rodgers, even if he plays, playing more than a series or anything like that. But most teams probably are going to play their first unit offense, their first unit defense, at least a quarter this week.
Last week, 8-6 to the over. So again, unders got back into the mix in week number two after that 14-3 streak in week number one. You know, last week I looked at this time on a Tuesday, And the lowest total on the board going into preseason week number two was 38.5.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the games were over 40.
Right.
This week, there's only four of the 14 games right now that are 40 or more. So you're seeing these numbers drift back down into the 30s for preseason week number three. I think to your point that they don't if you're going to show, like Patrick Mahomes played in the second quarter last week for the Chiefs against the Commanders, this week you'd be really surprised. Maybe Tom Brady, and by the way, the highest total out there is the Buccaneers and the Colts,
because
maybe they are anticipating that Brady, who is now back,
officially
could play.
And the Colts number ones, by the way, did not play at all last week against Detroit. So you're going to see Matt Ryan and the first teamers, also the first team defense playing. So that's another reason you've seen that go up.
So that's why now it feels like, with the exception, and information is key, certainly in preseason, you get all that information in the regular season each and every week. In the preseason, it's kind of shrouded in secrecy. Who's going to play? Who's not going to play? That's why you're seeing some of these totals, only four of those, again, 40 or more for this final week of the NFL season. We saw down in Miami, high praise for one Tua Tagovailoa. Now, if you've been following the kind of the Tua story, if you watch on social media a couple weeks ago, boy, they'll show a pass, it goes viral, and the Dolphins are back. Are you buying very quickly that has he looked good to you in preseason, what you've seen, that you go, yeah, Tyreek Hill, weapons on the outside, maybe this Miami offense will be a little bit more explosive than people think.
You know, I'm taking a cautious approach with Tua because, you know, he has looked good, but you don't necessarily want to go all in yet. He still has to prove it, I think, you know. But at least there's some optimism where it's not like, I'm such a baby because the Dolphins make me cry, to quote the great Darius Rucker. So, look, Mike McDaniel, I think, you know, a young coach, but pretty wise behind his years. He's been praising Tua. You know, this is my guy, man. I'm pumping him up. How good this guy can really be. You know, he's not being like Brian Flores, where it's like, dude, if you don't produce this play, I'm getting the quick hook and I'm replacing you and you're playing musical chairs. It's like, I'm going to stick with the guy. If he makes mistakes, you know, if he screws up, I'm going to stick with him. And there are a lot of weapons around him, but Miami is one of those teams. We have 32 teams in the NFL, and usually about, you know, maybe 40% of them, you're pretty sure, okay, they're going to be good. 40% of them, you're sure they're going to be bad. We have our read on every single team. Miami would fall in like that 20% for me, where it's like, I don't know what to do with this team right now, because this team, I think, has a pretty high ceiling and a lot of potential, but this team has the potential to really disappoint too. So I got to wait and see a little bit on Tua. I'm not willing to buy him yet, but I'm not willing to sell him either.
6 of 8, 73 yards in 2 drives against the Raiders. So that's why Mike McDaniel, the new head coach in Miami, was very high on his quarterback. And again, I think it's a happy medium. Okay, yes, I understand why the new coach is pumping up Tua so much. The old coach might have been a little bit too tough on him. Maybe he can meet in the middle there. You don't want to be looking over your shoulder every play,
right,
like it feels like he was with Brian Flores. But let's see how long the honeymoon last year with the new head coach and the QB. Speaking of honeymoons, is that honeymoon period over with Aaron Rodgers and his young receivers in Green Bay? We'll discuss when you come back with us. Here in the Lombardi Line, I'm Vincent, the Sports Betting Network. College Football Guide is out now, and the NFL Guide drops this Thursday. So start your football season off on the right foot with expert profiles of every team, including team trends, power ratings, and over-under recommendations, plus best bets on season win totals, divisional finishes, and player awards. Remember, the only way to get access to this year's football betting guides is to become a VSiN all-access subscriber. So sign up for our discounted football special and get all access to everything we do from now through the Super Bowl for only $175. Or you can save over 50% on the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all of your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Back alongside Wes Reynolds, I am Dave Ross. Wes, you did yeoman's work on those guides, and certainly we're going to talk more about the NFL right now and the Green Bay Packers. Because I look at the Pack, I cashed 2 tickets on them last year, over 11, an adjusted win total over 12. They got 13. That worked out just fine. Even with Aaron Rodgers not playing in a game against Kansas City. And by the way, I think he won the MVP the week he didn't play last year.
Once they saw that Green Bay was getting shut out deep into the fourth quarter, Jordan Love did have a late touchdown, got you in the back door, because I think when he was out, what that close, like 7.5, if I recall?
And it got him to 7.
Because Kansas City, they were having problems with their offense. That's when they were really struggling, kind of in that rut, and it was 13-0, late touchdown. But yeah, it was kind of like, okay, yeah, maybe he does mean a touchdown in the point spread at least.
So now you look at the profile this year, and I haven't played anything in the past. Because look at the total now. Now it's what's amazing to me. Last year was 11, okay, with Davante Adams. Mm-hmm. Now it's 11.5. Now, again, plus money, BetMGM at plus $1.10 if they think they're going to be a 12 win football team again. But we know about the rookie receivers and Dobbs and Watkins. We haven't seen yet the second round pick so far. But Aaron Rodgers, who was very, very tough on these guys about 2 weeks ago, if you heard things coming out of camp, like, we got a lot of work to do and these guys got to step up and, you know, they got to be ready to play, blah, blah, blah. Now, he's kind of changed the tune a little bit. He's walked it back, at least in the media.
Right.
And now he's like, you know, hey, like Dobbs, the standard is not the normal standard for a rookie. Like, he's already raised that bar, right? Mm-hmm. We'll find out about the second round pick once we get him in the regular season. But what do you make of Rodgers? Because to me, it does come down to 12 and trust. We knew he trusted 17. 17 is now in Las Vegas playing for the Raiders. So what about that trust factor? Do you trust Rodgers enough to trust the Packers long term?
I mean, I think you kind of have to, just based on the track record. Now, to be in full disclosure, I did pick the Minnesota Vikings, and I also bet them to win the NFC North at a little bit less than 3-1. And it's not necessarily that I think the Packers are going to fall off a cliff. You kind of trust that Rodgers and LaFleur probably going to figure it out at some point. But I think maybe the reason why you're seeing that juice to the under is because we anticipate at least an improved Minnesota Vikings team. They're about middle of the pack in terms of schedule strength. So it's not really an easy schedule, but it's not really an arduous schedule. And I think when you look just in a macro sense, by default, they're still the team to beat defensively.
The defense,
it's always been the offense that's kind of carried this team, but it's really the defense.
Glad
this defense
you brought that up.
Is probably one of the better units in the league. So it's like, maybe there's going to be a little bit of time for Aaron Rodgers and these guys to figure it out. If they get off to a sluggish start, let's say they're 3-3 through their first six games or something like that, or they're 2-3 through their first five. It's like, we're not going to push the panic button. We're going to be okay. Allows Rodgers to establish chemistry, and that's why I think a lot of people like Aaron Jones in terms of some of his player props, because it's like, okay, somebody's got to carry us like that first 4 to 6 weeks of the season. Even though you look at that schedule, relatively manageable. You got two tough road games in the first three at Minnesota and at Tampa Bay, so they could very well be 1-2 with New England coming in, but then you get New England, the Giants, and the Jets coming in, three straight home games, so you're like, okay, that might be the get-right spot for Green Bay in the schedule. By the way, before we even continue on with this, I believe this from Bill Huber at SI, who is the Packers beat writer, mentions that Matt LaFleur has now announced that most of the team's starters are not going to play against the Chiefs here for the preseason. The offensive line apparently is going to play, though. But a lot of the skill guys, Aaron Rodgers is not going to play.
Poor Jordan Love.
Yeah.
He's got to play the Chiefs again.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't work out well last year.
Yeah, he's 1-0 covering against them, though. But also Aaron Jones, you would think, is not going to play. Because if you remember back, I believe, the same date in 2015, Jordy Nelson tore his ACL in a preseason game. We know what we were talking about at the beginning of the segment was this is a young receiving core, and with a couple guys that are near the end of their careers like a Randall Cobb. The receivers do need work, as Aaron Rodgers was talking about. So it's like, do I really want to get one of them hurt, especially one of these young guys that have bright futures like Christian Watson or Romeo Doubs? Do I really want to get these guys hurt? So discretion's being the better part of valor for Matt LaFleur. I think that this is smart. So you're probably going to see throughout the day, even though Green Bay has moved into a little bit of the favorite role, you're probably going to see that kind of come back at least a little bit more to pick him, I would think, with this announcement that a lot of the starters not going.
I'm not going to play that win total this year at 11.5 because I think 11 feels like it's right about the right number for me. I'm glad you mentioned the defense. Jair Alexander being healthy this year, that's a top flight corner in the league. They're going to have a better pass rush, you would believe, this year. They look pretty good in the back four. That defense, it's not going to look the same for Aaron Rodgers without Davante Adams this year. It might be more pedestrian. Those two backs that you mentioned, they can run the ball. They could actually play more conservative football with Aaron Rodgers this year and rely on that defense and the running game more as those young receivers get up to speed. They could be, to me, I would fade the Packers earlier in the season than I would later in the season. I do like the Vikings in this week one matchup in the regular season. And I'll tell you this, Kirk Cousins was pretty darn good last year. Now you look at Aaron Rodgers' numbers, and he was now the reigning defending two-time MVP. You know what his numbers were? 37 touchdowns, four picks, a quarterback rating 111.9. That's really good. Yeah. That's your MVP. The other guy, Kirk Cousins, 33 touchdowns, seven picks, a rating of 103.1. Not too far off.
Right. And you're also getting a more offensive-friendly staff, you would think, with Kevin O'Connell now as the head coach. Wes Phillips going to be the offensive coordinator. They come in fresh off winning the Lombardi Trophy with the Los Angeles Rams. So, look, I know Kevin O'Connell's never called plays, right, but everybody's got to call their first game. So, you know, you got to think Kevin O'Connell as the head coach going to call that. Minnesota should be pretty good on offense. Can that defense get off the field on third down, which they could not last year? And speaking of defense, just kind of going back to what we were talking about with Green Bay, Joe Barry, I think they took a big step behind him last year. They were ninth overall, 10th in pass defense, 11th in run defense, 14th in scoring defense. So upper half, upper third of the league pretty much in every single category. And you mentioned without Jair Alexander for most of the season. So they've drafted very well, if you look. And they add some young talent here to Quay Walker, yet another one of the Georgia Bulldogs that got drafted very high in the NFL draft. He looks like he might be starting at one of the inside linebacker positions. Devontae Wyatt, another first-rounder. So Green Bay has got a lot of young talent. Like, these are not a bunch of old guys. No. These are young guys kind of coming together in their prime. You mentioned Alexander and Rashawn Gary and Darnell Savage, Eric Stokes. So these are not guys that have like 10 or 12 years in the league that are kind of at the downside or the back nine of their careers. So I think Green Bay should very much at least be a top 10 defense again.
Agreed. And I do understand your Vikings play at almost 3-1. I believe now about plus 250 to win the division this year. If you like Minnesota here, again, I'm just looking at Cousins' numbers the first 4 years in Minnesota. I mean, his worst season was his first 30 touchdowns, 10 picks, a quarterback rating of 99.7. 2 years ago, 2020, 35 touchdowns, 13 picks, a rating of 105. 2019, 26 touchdowns, 6 picks, 107.4. Cousins, who is a lightning rod around the league, his numbers stack up, but he hasn't translated to wins. So if you like the Vikings to have an improved defense, and really that's why Mike Zimmer is not there. He was supposed to be the defensive guru. They were a sieve defensively last year. If the defense can get better, stop blaming KC8. You know, the offense does their job, I would say, to a degree. Now, can they be better? Yeah. 4,200 yards last year. Some think, I saw Rich Gannon, a former MVP, he says he could throw for 5,000 in this new offense this year. So I think Green Bay will get pushed by Minnesota. My question would be, the Packers' defense on paper is still better than the Vikings' defense on paper, even if the Minnesota offense can be equal to Aaron Rodgers.
It's probably very good, too, for Minnesota to draw Green Bay in week number one. I think, what am I seeing in the market now? About 1.5, 2, pretty much, Green Bay across the board laying. Actually, it is. There's more twos and two and a halves out there than there are 1.5. So, look, another game that's in teaser territory. We see a lot of these home dogs in week one. I believe we have 10 of them out of 16 games in week one. This is one that you got to think Minnesota is going to get teased through that 3-7 up to like 8, 8.5. And look, I kind of like them anyway because the Packers, low-hanging fruit, road favorite, still the team to beat. Is it a show-em-who's-boss game? I think this is a nice early litmus test, really, for the Minnesota Vikings to say, okay, this is your chance to kind of say, we have arrived. We are going to challenge for this division. You're not going to run away with it like you do every year.
We'll find out who the new Stark will be. Who's going to be the King of the North? Will it be the Packers or the Vikings? Game of Thrones reference. When we come back, Will Hill's going to join us, King of New York, discuss a big ticket he has and if it looks better today than it did yesterday. Come on back. The Lombardi Line. I'm Leeson, the Sports Betting Network. Attention, BetMGM customers. Do you have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Well, here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account, click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting him to register at a new account in the same state that you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they're going to receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you're going to receive a $50 bonus as well. So share the excitement at BetMGM and get a $50 bonus. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Site credit expires in 30 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi and Nevada. Back alongside Wes Reynolds, I'm Dave Ross. We continue the Lombardi Line here on a Tuesday. And the King of New York, Will Hill, is going to join us now. It does every Tuesday. Of course, does a great job with the New York City cast here on VSiN. Has got a very interesting wager. And Will, I want to know, one, when you made your futures wager on the Brooklyn Nets to win the NBA title in this upcoming season. And two, I think what we're learning from the Kevin Durant story is sometimes if you ignore the people that yell the loudest, eventually they're going to calm down. Tell us what your wager is on the Nets with this big news today that it looks like peace, love, and harmony has come to Brooklyn with Kevin Durant.
Boy, it's just so funny about the Nets because they're such a big story nationally, but locally here in the Northeast, nobody cares. They have no fans. But from a betting standpoint, this is interesting. And this isn't past posting. This isn't saying I told you so after the fact. I went on the air and said he was 7-1 to stay with the Nets. The Nets were 50-1 at some books to win the title. And when he made that trade request 4th of July weekend, like everybody else, I said, you know what, let's look around. Let's see what makes sense. And the way you circle the league and just the different packages, nothing really made sense. You look for 25 and under players, 25 and younger, that could match with Durant. Nobody seemed to want to give up. Even Scotty Barnes, hell, the Grizzlies yesterday said, hey, we're interested, but we're not going to give you Desmond Bane. couple that with the fact that he's 33. He's under a 4-year contract. The Nets don't have any of their picks, so you can't just do a full rebuild. Durant didn't have any leverage here. You know, usually these guys, when they ask their way out, it's Anthony Davis. They're 25, they're 26. They have a year left on the deal. It's, hey, trade for me now or else you're getting nothing for me in a year if you don't trade me now, and I'll just walk in free agency. This wasn't that case. Durant's 33. He's essentially under a lifetime contract here. So I just thought that he was going to stay the whole time. It's now down to 7-1. Obviously, that's not bettable. That's probably them being overvalued like they were all of last year. I think if you're looking for a betting angle here, maybe Nash, 25-1 or so, coach of the year, the narrative that he held us all together, he was almost fired. Usually the coach of the year is a top 2 or 3 seed. The Nets, look, if they can get Simmons back healthy, which I know is tricky to count on, it's tricky to count on Kyrie, Durant's missed games, there's certainly a path where this goes wrong. But if you look at that roster, TJ Warren, O'Neal, Curry, that's a really good team. There's a reason they were the short shot to win the title last year. This is still a really good team. It's not impossible the Nets win 56, 57 games. Nash and the Nets get a 1 or 2 seed, and Nash has the narrative here where he held it all together and he wins Coach of the Year. So obviously you missed the better numbers on the Nets. Maybe Nash Coach of the Year is the only sort of betting avenue from this point forward.
No, I think that's a good call, Will, because if you look with the Nets, obviously they disappointed last year, but it's like they never have really had a full year where they really gave this a chance, okay? Because obviously everything that went on with Kyrie, with not having the vaccine and whatnot, so he wasn't available. So they've never really had this team play together for a season. It's like, I feel like you got to give it at least 1 year before you totally blow it up. So good spot by Will there getting that price. And it was 50-1 for a couple weeks because we talked about it ad nauseum on the air when it seemed like it was a foregone conclusion that Durant was going to get traded.
And this is the Lombardi Line, and Michael talks about it all the time on this program. Sometimes as an executive, you can say no.
Yes.
The players do not necessarily get to pick and choose who they want to play for.
He said, trade me. They said no. He said, well, why don't you fire Sean Marks and Steve Nash, GM and coach? They said no. And he's like, okay, let's run it back.
There you go.
So hey, sometimes it's the old blue chips thing where Penny Hardaway goes into the office, Butch McRae, and says, hey, if I transfer, does my mom lose her house? Then he calls the guy Happy, the friend of the program. He says, better be at practice on Monday. I mean, the Nets looked at him and said, hey, you better be at practice.
Yes.
There you go. So this is all you got to do sometimes.
The best players that money can buy.
What do we give him? Happy a car? We give him a house.
Tractor. We bought him a tractor.
Ricky Rowe, Matt Nover, Indiana University legend.
People need to go back and watch that because now with NIL in college.
They were NIL before NIL was cool, apparently.
Absolutely they were. All right, well, let's get back to the Major League Baseball slate that we have on the docket today. And look, I thought maybe Sunday was the best win of the year for the Mets. They come back and get that thrilling win against Philadelphia. Then they lose yesterday with Max Scherzer on the mound. Aaron Judge goes yard. And then the news that Jacob DeGrom is not going to go today, and they're going to put Taijuan Walker out there in the mound for the Metropolitans against the Yankees. What do you make of this Subway Series here, part two, today in the Boogie Down?
Yeah, I've been betting on the Mets a lot this year. I've been betting against the Yankees a lot recently, but I was actually one of the people that was on the Yankees last night. I just thought that was an overreaction to how poorly they've been playing. I'm going to bet the Yankees again. If you look at Walker's underlying stats, I mean, he should really have an ERA that's north of five. He gets hit pretty hard. He's got a way here of, you know, working out of these jams, similar to Carrasco, where the ERA, the traditional stats, don't look as bad as some of the more underlying metrics. But to me, Montas, he's better than he's looked. He's been a disaster for the Yankees. And when you couple that with the fact that Montgomery has basically, you know, gone to St. Louis and been prime Randy Johnson, 26 innings, one run, one hit shutout last night. Even J.P. Sears, who they gave up for Montas, has been really good. And Montas has been bad, but he's better than he's shown. He's a good ground ball strikeout guy. I just got a feeling that he's got a good game in him here. I do like the Yankees at this short price. So I'm going to take the Yankees. Boy, the Mets just can't seem to shake the Braves. Every time the Braves get close, the Mets pull away. When the Mets pull away, the Braves sort of inch their way back. It's kind of been this song and dance here. So I think the Mets are still in good shape overall. I'd be a little concerned. Scherzer has not missed a ton of bats lately. Only three strikeouts last night. They've been getting the barrel on the bat on him a lot lately. You know, Atlanta hit him last week. Philly hit him a couple starts ago. He's still really good, but a guy in his late 30s, you'd be a little concerned that he's, you know, losing velocity, not missing as many bats. But I do like the Yankees here tonight.
And we talk about that Montgomery trade, too. Of course, Harrison Bader has yet to suit up for the New York Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these trades haven't worked out yet, but maybe Frankie Montas can get it turned around tonight in the Bronx. By the way, Aaron Judge, another home run last night as he extends his lead, at least in the odds board for the MVP. But, Will, one team that we thought was kind of figuring it out as they got a few games over 500 were the Chicago White Sox. Now they're kind of back to just being two over 500. It's going to be Dylan Cease, who's been their best guy this year. He is going against the Orioles. Who would have thought the Orioles, you know, right in the mix for the wild card, 62-60, especially after that Mancini trade. It's like, are they giving up? Well, apparently the rest of the team has not given up, but we do have the White Sox on the mound. Dylan Cease, 209 ERA. Strikeouts about 12 per nine innings. You're going to go with the road favorite tonight.
Yeah, I mean, people say you can't figure out the White Sox. I think you can figure out the White Sox. They're just a very, you know, consistently inconsistent team. They're just all over the place, but they're pretty good when Cease pitches. Cease has been incredible. He's going to finish, you know, top three or four in terms of the Cy Young, if not higher. I thought, you know, last week against Houston, he had a bad start, so that maybe takes him out of the running to actually win it. But to me, this is a pitching mismatch. Voth has actually pitched pretty well for Baltimore. He was a disaster pretty much his whole career with the Nationals. I guess the Orioles have messed with his usage, having him throw some different pitches, some different grips. So he's actually pitched pretty well. But to me, this is still a pitching mismatch here in favor of Chicago.
All right, talking to Will Hill. Follow him on Twitter at NotTheWillHill. Very quickly, you mentioned the Metropolitans always looking in the rearview and seeing the Atlanta Braves. You're on the Yankees today. What about Max Fried and the Braves as they go to Pittsburgh to take on the Pirates? Is this league going to be two when I wake up tomorrow?
I'm afraid there's a possibility. I think if you're a Met fan, you'd sign right now for it to just be three this time tomorrow, because I do think the Braves are going to beat the Pirates. I still need somebody to investigate this Braves schedule, because every time I look up, they're playing the Marlins, the Pirates, the Reds, the Nationals. There's no way this is a fair schedule, although they did just beat Houston 2 out of 3. But to me, this is a mismatch. You have to lay 1.5 unless you want to lay the 260. I will lay the 1.5 minus. It was $1.45, $1.50-ish. To me, this is just, again, a pitching mismatch here with Brubaker going against Fried, who, look, if Alcantara falls off here, Fried could sneak up and steal the Cy Young award. It's not impossible. He's still got a quarter of the season left, but to me, this is a mismatch. I like Atlanta here minus the 1.5.
Will, about 30 seconds left. College football week 0 starts on Saturday, and you're going to go over to the Dublin for the Big Ten matchup between Northwestern and Nebraska, all the way up to 13 now on the Purple Cats, and you like the underdog with Pat Fitzgerald.
Yeah, I just feel like week one, we don't always know as much as we think about these teams. 13's a big number. Northwestern's a scrappy program, a scrappy team. You never really trust Nebraska. To me, this is just too big of a number. I like Nebraska, Northwestern here getting the plus 13.
I got to wrap it up, Will, but very quickly, we got to see you here at South Point. How was the rest of your week in Vegas?
A lot of fun. It was good to meet you guys. Thank you guys for having me. It was a lot of fun to see the studio and to meet everybody.
It's great to see you out of New York back here in Las Vegas. There he is, everybody. Check him out on Twitter at NotTheWillHill. Talking more NFL, and you come back with us right here on the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.